Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Craig Hoffman.
There were some games to be had, and my team just let me down.
Oh, is that what happened?
Bears, Jets.
The Hoffman Show.
If in life your fate is reliant on the Bears and the Jets, you're already screwed.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hour number two of the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. 5:30, you'll hear from Mike Mayock because he's going to join us live. 6:30, you'll hear from Logan Paulson as we give you a Take Command preview of Commanders and Bucks. But right now, let's get to it. 5 o'clock means not my beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Joining us today, he's on his way to Tampa this weekend. Of course, the game is on NBC4 Sunday Night Football. JP Finley will be there. Host, of course, B. Mitch and Finley on The Fan and sports reporter for NBC4. JP, what up?
What up, Hoff? We got a pregame show for this game on Channel 4.
So watch. Ooh, look at you doing television. It's almost like that's your job.
Trying.
So you'll have plenty to talk about on said pregame show. Will you use lots of footage of Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore fighting?
Man, you know, I guess. I'm sure that, I mean, it'll obviously be a topic, and Lattimore spoke today, and we got to, you know, put that on TV, and people are going to be so drawn to that. I understand it. It almost, to me, feels a little, like, inauthentic for us as Washington media fans, whatever we are, to be like all in on this Lattimore Evans thing. It just feels like we're like appropriating a player rivalry. You know what I mean? Like this is a Saints Bucks thing, but whatever, it'll probably happen Sunday night. So I am wildly fascinated for that matchup. But like, to me, here's where I stand. Because we've never seen it or really experienced it, I can't elevate it to, like, my top of mind. Like, the top of mind for me is still, can they stop Bucky Irving? Is Jaden going to be the leading rusher again? And late-game heroics that they've become known for. Evans and Lattimore.
Well, to me, I think that the fighting thing is like a fun aside, and it's real. It's happened. They clearly have no love lost there. But it also, I think, overshadows just how good Lattimore has been against Evans in their careers, where he has held Mike Evans catchless 5 of 13 matchups, which is just an insane stat. And then there is kind of the question off of that is like, what does that do to the rest of their defense? Does that allow them to put more resources towards the run and stopping Bucky Irving? So ultimately, like if we get past the funny ha-has of them potentially playing Rock'em Sock'em Robots, like what does Marshawn being back mean for this defense and all the other important stuff it has to do?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think Sam still is playing at a pretty high level. And I think you get Quan Martin back this week. He's been playing well. Like, all of a sudden, dude, you have less bad players on the field to oversimplify. I think it'll help them a ton. And if he's able to slow Evans down, McMillan can still beat you. They got other weapons, other options. I guess there's some question about the tight end, right? But it's a huge, huge step. And I think you nailed it that we maybe get a little caught up in, him and Evans might fist fight versus, like, he's just going to try to lock him down, and that has a huge advantage for the defense.
For sure. And, you know, in the first matchup, BSJ did his best and he, you know, it was the classic BSJ. He's in good position and then got mossed. And on third downs and on and for the two touchdowns, like that was kind of the story. And so if you have a guy who is not going to be overwhelmed by Mike Evans' play strength in key situations, third down red zone, that's obviously quite important. What do you think the key is? And as you're talking to people in the building this week, what do they think the key is to stopping Bucky Irving in that Tampa rushing attack?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to kind of give you coach speak on run fits and just playing gap integrity and all that stuff. Honestly, dude, for me, especially in that Dallas game, and I think they played that pretty conservatively. I don't think they game planned a ton for the Cowboys, didn't want to put a lot on tape in a meaningless Week 18 game. But some of this is about winning individual matchups, and especially in that Dallas game, I thought they kind of got whipped up front. And like, you can scheme it, you can blitz, like, there's a lot of, like, other things you can do, but you need guys to win with some consistency at the line of scrimmage, and I just don't think they did that. Honestly, I don't have a ton of excitement that they're going to do it this week. The Tampa O-line, a guy you and I both covered, Kevin Carberry, running his own room down there, like, that Tampa O-line is good, man, and worse is one of the best tackles in football, maybe the best tackle. I mean, they are good, they are young, they are nasty. I'm very concerned about the lines of scrimmage in both sides of the ball because I don't know if you've watched any, but that dude Canty is a problem, and they didn't face him week one. And you add him to Vea, and they're just such different players. When we were down there for week one, I had heard about Canty, and then he was kind of a late surprise inactive, and then he went on to miss a couple games, I think. But I am they're going to get Biotis back, which is a great step, or we think so anyway. But I'm concerned about both lines of scrimmage.
I think that is a very valid concern, especially based off recent weeks. JP Finley with us on the Hoffman Show for Not My Beat today. Of course, you can check him and B. Mitch out on Monday for their reaction to whatever happens in Tampa, 10 a.m. to 2 on 106.7 The Fan and everything JP is doing around the game on NBC4 pregame. And then he and Mitch on the postgame on the Monumental Sports app for the Beltway Football Show. So on the offensive side of it, well, first of all, on Kansi, he is super quick, but Logan thinks that you can run at him. So I think that's something interesting to watch because he's not the biggest guy as opposed to Vea, who, like, if you run at him, it's like running into a mountain and like that you shouldn't run into mountains. It's no good. It's the, like, what is it? The Wile E. Coyote tunnels, except for there's no tunnel there. It's just, you're just going to run into the side of it and smash right to the ground. I got asked this question multiple times this week in interviews though, of like, what if Jaden Daniels is the leading rusher? And my response was kind of like, what if Jaden Daniels is the leading rusher? This dude can rush for 80, 90 yards a game. And in the playoffs, teams tend to rush their quarterbacks more. So I guess, like, if they lean into that, is that an issue for you at all? Is that a formula you think can be successful? Or do they need to beat these better teams like Tampa and like anybody else they'll face the rest of the season? Because we're in it now. Do they need to get that running back game or that running back running game going?
Dude, I almost expect him to. I kind of want them to pull out the second half of the Eagles game playbook where they were just kind of getting worked and just leaned into it and almost went air raid. And I think the way Bowles blitzes is going to be so frequently. I mean, we saw it week one, and clearly at that point, Jaden was kind of getting used to the speed of the NFL, and he was taking off without keeping his eyes downfield. But he was an effective runner in that game, and I think he's a way better player now. But I expect him to be the leading rusher in this thing. And I think you still work the design stuff, but I think he's going to identify. Cliff earlier in the week said his number one goal is to make sure Jaden knows where his escape options are against the blitz. And he didn't explicitly mean to run, because I think he also means, you know, where you've got a running back in the flat or wherever you've got a safe spot going against the hot action. But I think a lot of it's going to be his legs. And I think, like, we got to stop being so – I don't know if it's RG3 driven or what, but, like, as a group, man, there are running quarterbacks all over the NFL. They run, they get hit, they get up, and they keep playing. Like, we got to stop pearl clutching every time Jaden takes off. It's part of his game.
you're preaching to the choir. You might be preaching to the choir leader, in fact, because I said that before the season. I was like, the biggest hits he's going to take in his career are probably in the pocket. Think of the most scared you were about Jaden Daniels this year. And it was when he got bent over backwards in the pocket a couple weeks ago. Again, I think it was against Atlanta,
right?
Yeah, and then he pops back up and you're like, okay, cool. We got Gumby at quarterback. That's sick. But like, that's the scariest hit he's taken all year. And then the other scariest ones, quote unquote, were week one against Tampa because apparently he didn't get his helmet fit right in the preseason and his helmet hasn't popped off since. So that's good as well. But I totally agree with you. And we see it every year in the playoffs, and we'll see it this weekend. Josh Allen is going to run more this weekend by design than he has any time since the playoffs last year. And Lamar Jackson will probably run more design this weekend than any time since the playoffs last year. And Mahomes will scramble more next weekend than any other time. And these guys get out in space and they know how to not get hit. And I've never heard coach talk about like tackle evasion as much as Dan Quinn has, but like there's a real skill and art to that and they teach it. And I kind of trust him to be fine with it. And if not, they probably don't have a chance to win anyway.
Dude, totally. You need, if you look at like who has what matchups, like what position groups have an advantage in this game, there's not a lot of spots. I think the Commanders' offense against, like the Commanders' passing attack versus Tampa's secondary, I like Washington. I know Winfield might play, and that does make an impact, but I still like Washington. But like Tampa's probably got the more balanced, better roster overall, but Washington has Jaden, and you got to let Jaden do his, like the entire arsenal that kid can deploy. He's got to do it. It's the playoffs, like. He had to do it. I mean, honestly, like they won their last four coming in, right?
Last five coming in.
Last five, right. After the bye, like he was the reason they won games. Philly and Atlanta, the two big ones they won, it was Jaden. And so to think that it's okay for him to do that in week 16 and 17 to get into the playoffs, and then you dial that back in the playoffs is asinine.
100%. And I just pulled up the NFL Pro preview on like the Next Gen Stats NFL Pro site. And they basically do like overall passing efficiency, rank, and then an advantage. And the two advantages that Washington has of the six that they are list here are overall passing efficiency and overall rushing efficiency with the Commanders offense versus the Bucks defense. And they are the third most efficient rushing team in the league is Washington. That's because Jaden Daniels' scrambles are so efficient that it takes every other thing that they've done in the run game up by a million. And so that's obviously going to be a huge deal this week, even if you don't want him scrambling quite as much as he did the first time around, just because you'd hope that he's got some easier outlets and understands where to go with the football. Speaking of, as JP Finley's with us here on the Hoffman Show, it feels...
Can I add something to that, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're really good at this kind of stuff. I would love to see those... I'm guessing that rushing efficiency statistic is based on the year stats.
Yes.
And for a lot of the year, they were running the hell out of the football. So Jaden was efficient, but so was the offense. I fear what those numbers look like post-bye, like the last month.
Totally.
Completely ineffective at running the ball.
Totally. And if there was a way for me to sort them, I would do that real quick, but I don't have that technology. Like Fortier probably does. He's got a fancy Washington Post subscription to True Media, but JP, you know who I work for. We're a radio company.
I do.
We're just doing the best we can.
If this makes you feel better, I have no idea how to use Excel. I have never created a spreadsheet in my life.
You've never created a spreadsheet for anything?
Not once. I make lists, documents.
JP, I'm going to tell you something that I did this week, and you're going to be like, you are the biggest dork that I have ever met in my life. I made... because I was trying to figure out how good the Commanders were with Daron Payne lined up on the edge. So I had already charted, like when I watch the tape to prep for Take Command and then ultimately this show, I write down like kind of what personnel groupings on both sides of the ball, what happened on the play, and then I write down like the yardage of the play. So I already had all that stuff charted, and I have a way of charting like when Payne is on the edge. I have a special name. I just put like a plus sign next to whatever, like nickel plus or base plus. So I went back through. I put that in a spreadsheet, but I'm very bad at spreadsheet formulas. But I know that ChatGPT is good at spreadsheet formulas. So I made a spreadsheet, asked ChatGPT for the code so I could just put in the numbers, and then it would do the averages for me based off if it was run or pass. And then I also did the total. And I did that earlier this week because I'm a dork.
you completely lost me with most of that. But my guess is you had Linnell in your ear telling you how bad Payne and Allen are all week. So you wanted to actually put some numbers behind it.
No.
Because he texts me anti Payne and Allen smut. Like, and I'm like, what do you want me to do with this? He sent me one thing that Payne and Allen didn't qualify for. And I'm not trying to defend, like, those guys have had the best year. But one thing that I think is so stupid is all of a sudden people are acting like the defense is underperforming because Allen came back. They've been underperforming for 6 weeks, regardless. But he sent me this thing that Payne and Allen didn't qualify for, and it very clearly said, like, minimum 400 snaps or something. And I was like, dude, Allen probably didn't even qualify for that with the amount of time he missed. Anyway.
Yeah, no, numbers, statistics. I tried to explain to Linnell. He made had some good argument he was making against Russell the other day. And I was like, here's how you, like, you. I know, I walk by the studio and I see that you have the next-gen chat stats passing charts up. I know you know how to look at that and be like, oh, that dot is above the 20-plus yard line. And, like, that's how you would do it. Just, like, go look it up. Do the research. And he's like, oh. I was like, yeah, that's... Anyway, we don't need to talk about Linnell's takes. Linnell talks about Linnell's takes enough. The point is that the Commanders need to find some rushing efficiency and some passing efficiency. Getting 17 the ball is a good way to be efficient on the on the passing side of things. I think one of the big differences in the offense now versus week one is Cliff, Jaden, and Dan understand what they have in Terry. By the way, today named second team all pro. Congrats to him, Luvu Wagner. Who am I forgetting that also got named second team all pro today? Luvu Wagner, Eckler. Terry, and Eckler. Yeah, as the kick returner. So congrats to all those guys. But they understand in a way that I don't think they did the first 2 weeks of the season, like how good Terry is, and that the definition of open for Terry is a lot bigger than it is for most guys, that he is the best contested catch guy statistically in the league this year. How do you think they try to make sure that he gets the ball this week? Like, is that something they emphasize early? Are they patient? Like, what's kind of the vibe around getting Terry involved, considering how uninvolved he was week one against these guys?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of talked about that yesterday, I guess we talked to Terry, and just about how, you know, early in this season, it wasn't that great for him. And then if you look at how things finished, the best, at least touchdown-wise, best year of his career, right? And I think, and he's making second team All-Pro. Like, he's getting this national recognition and the contested catches, like you mentioned. So I think it's a much more concerted effort with Terry. But I don't know that, like, you know, some teams, like, I feel like KOC, if whatever game flow is and Jefferson doesn't have a touch towards the end of the first quarter, they're just going to run like a bubble for him or something just to get the ball in his hands. I don't know that Cliff does that for Terry. Like, we probably have evidence that says he won't, but I think honestly with the way their corners play and the way the blitz is, like, Jaden will just identify Terry as his outlet pre-snap and he'll get involved early anyway.
I think that's a really good point. It's funny because Cliff does that sometimes. He actually, I think last week they got Terry a bubble or a smoke screen, and like Terry's actually not that, for as great as he is after the catch, is not a great screen runner, and so it goes for 2 yards, and then you move on, and you're like, well, I guess he got the touch, so that's nice.
Right.
But there's
and
plenty.
Ironically, Yami's by far their best screen receiver.
Yeah, the week that he was out, their offense was so lifeless. And it's part because, like, he's also stepping in for Noah. And while Noah's stats weren't amazing, he was the third leading catcher and he was top five in the NFL in PI. So, like, he moved the chains in a different way. But yeah, getting Diami some of those, getting Eckler back involved. I'm really fascinated about their blitz plan this week because Bowles is just cranking it up in a major, major way. Is there any other thing matchup wise, whether it's, I mean, we kind of talked about Commanders passing game via Terry, Commanders run game. We've talked about trying to stop them on the other side. I guess we haven't really talked about Baker. Like, when you look at Baker, last thing here with JP Finley, what's the most dangerous part of Baker Mayfield to you? He's been great as a scrambler. He's been great in the pocket. Dude threw for 40 plus touchdowns. What scares you the most about Baker this week?
Sappy, but it's just his competitiveness. Like, I mean, he can match Jaden in the ability to never give up on a play, on a snap, on a game. And I think the Bucks have that mindset, much like the Commanders do, that, hey, our guy's going to have us in this thing no matter what. And that's a dangerous feeling for a football team. From a straight football perspective, is his ability to just turn, you know, chicken feathers into chicken salad. Like, you could have a busted play that he'll wiggle out of, roll left, and make a 30-yard gain. I do think, as Baker's being celebrated deservedly, at the same time, man, he'll turn it over. Like,
yeah,
he tied for the league lead in picks. I think the way Quinn and Witt preach ball is life takeaways, and then you get Lattimore back, and Mikey's got a ball hawk nose, Quad can come up with the football. You know, Lulu has had a ball in his hands like three straight games. He's come down with one of them, but maybe he's come down, maybe it's three out of four games. I don't know specifically, but if Lulu, like, I think to win on the road in the playoffs, I think you got to win the turnover battle. Washington was super tight with turnovers for a long time. Obviously, that changed with the Philly game. I think they got to protect the ball. I think Eckler will be a big part of this. the way that Tampa blitzes,
yeah,
I almost think Eckler might lead them in running back snaps, because one, he's so effective as a pass catcher. Two, I think he's their best guy in pass pro. B-Rob had a pretty spotty game in pass pro with the Falcons game, and I don't know. I'm very curious how they have to. Obviously, Dallas for Eckler was like, get him out there, get him a couple touches, we're good. I'm fascinated to see what they do with Austin Sunday night, because I think he could be a real big factor in this game.
I totally agree. And a couple of things just to close loops and slash put numbers to things you just said. If this game is close late, which I believe quote unquote close game is defined by the NFL is within one score with less than 5 minutes remaining. Washington 8-4 on the year. Tampa is just 3-5. Turnover wise, Washington +1 on the year, 15th in the league. Tampa was -5 turnover differential on the year. They're 20th in the NFL. And by the way, these teams basically even on penalties. Washington was 18th, Tampa 13th, but the difference was 3 penalties. So that's something to definitely watch Sunday as well. JP, great stuff, well, dude.
The turnover thing for Washington to finish +1 and they had 5 in one game is pretty damn remarkable.
Yeah, that's. I would be curious if, like, you just took 2 off of that, how high they would go in the rankings. Because
well,
they're 15.
I mean, B-Rob fumbled twice in that game. He hadn't fumbled in 500 snaps.
Right.
Now, like, some of it's just weird, fluky stuff.
But, hey, it's football, and it's the playoffs, and weird, fluky stuff happens. So who knows? Maybe the flukes will go Washington's way on Sunday night. JP, you'll be talking about it on NBC4 beforehand. What time y'all get going with pregame locally, JP?
7 o'clock.
Okay, 7 o'clock. Then they'll hand it over to the national pregame, and then Mike and Chris and Melissa on the call. By the way, if you missed Melissa Stark with us yesterday, great chat at this time. Definitely worth checking out on the podcast. And then JP will be with Mitch Tischler for the Beltway Football Show live on the Monumental Sports app postgame, and then with B. Mitch again on Monday. JP, always appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Hoff. Take care, buddy.
Mike Mayock, Westwood One, next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are scheduled here to catch up with Mike Mayock, who's calling the game Sunday for Westwood One on the national radio broadcast. But we're waiting on Mike to call. So in the meantime, we're going to go around the NFL. If Mike calls in, we'll get right to Mike. If not, hopefully we'll have him tracked down for the 5:45 segment. 6 o'clock, we will go to our pick 6 at 6, where Anthony and I will pick our keys to the game. But let's go around the NFL, Anthony, and spend a little time on the other games. There's only 6 of them, but they obviously carry a much, much larger importance than we've been used to, where the last couple of weeks has been like, all right, this game, 1, 2, 3, pick. This game, 1, 2, 3, pick. We got more analysis, I think, for these. Let's just go in chronological order, starting with the Saturday game between the Houston Texans and the Los Angeles Chargers. And this, I feel like people think this game is going to be one thing, and it might wind up being another, because they think of these two teams, they have two great defenses, and the Chargers are going to run the ball, and it's going to be this slog. And I don't know that that's actually the way this is going to play out. The Texans' run defense is sensational. their defense against quarterback scrambles is terrible. So I kind of feel like this is going to be a bit of a wild one where Justin Herbert's going to be running around making plays, and then it's going to be a matter of can the Texans offense keep up if Herbert makes a couple. Of course, if the Texans can keep him in the pocket, then the Chargers might have some trouble, because while Ladd McConkey's been a revelation the last couple of weeks, he certainly is still a rookie in his first ever playoff game. But if he's able to get loose, then I just don't see how the Texans offensive line is able to hold up and protect C.J. Stroud in the way that they're going to need to win this football game. So I'm definitely intrigued by this matchup more than I thought I was at the beginning of the week, because I think there's some really like interesting trends to follow for this season. But that is kind of where we stand on Chargers and Texans. For those not watching on YouTube, they can't see that Anthony is now answering the phone. So, Anthony, can you give me a quick thumbs up, thumbs down? Keep going? Nope. We're giving a no-no. Okay. All right. So we're going to keep going around the NFL. And we'll see if we can get Mayock, here shortly. So, Anthony, do you have thoughts on the Chargers, Texans game?
I wanted to piggyback off what you were talking about as far as, the Texans defense. I think the defense is going to come to play. It's been the offense. And we've seen, you know, defenses go on the field, be on the field, play 70, 80 snaps, and eventually you're going to break. So I feel as though if Houston can get their defense going, I mean their offense going, CJ can, you know, hit some of the throws that we've seen him routinely hit last year, because this season he's just been so consistent.
That's the thing, can he find Nico for
of rhythm? Something.
Forget rhythm. Just get it all at once. If he can hit two explosive plays to Nico Collins, this game's totally different.
Yep.
And
you haven't seen that, though. So I'm going to lean on the Chargers to go out there and get the job done. Again, I just don't believe in the Texans' offense. But if they come to play and they surprise everybody, I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't believe in the Texans' offense either, and they've given me absolutely no reason to believe in them as an offense. All right, let's keep it rolling with the Steelers and the Ravens. And basically the only reason that anyone gives the Steelers a chance is because this is Steelers-Ravens, and there's a long history of these two playing each other in big important games, and the idea that Mike Tomlin and the Steelers aren't going to be ready to play feels preposterous. But purely on paper, like, the Ravens are favored by 9.5, and they should win by that much or more the way the Pittsburgh Steelers have closed this season. And there's an interesting scene in Hard Knocks this week. If you haven't been watching Hard Knocks in season this year, is following the AFC North. And this scene really struck me, Anthony. So the Steelers lose the season finale to the Bengals, and they're coming off the field. And Russell Wilson stops Cam Hayward. Of all people, Cam Hayward, and is like, hey man, like, we're 0-0 now, like, we can't, like, we're gonna go roll everybody, like, we're gonna do our thing, whatever he says. But Cam Hayward's kind of giving Russ this look, like, little buddy, I've been here, I know you won a Super Bowl, I know you're Russell Wilson, but get off, like, I don't know that now's the time for positivity. And this is, I think, part of the Russell Wilson experience is like, Russ, if you can get going a little bit, or even if you're middling, like, his positivity and his relentless positivity as a leader, I think can be really uplifting for people. Russ has a self-belief and a demeanor that I think is pretty special for an NFL quarterback, and I think can be really magical in the right situation. I could also see it that if you are, say, in the middle of the worst month you've had all season going into the playoffs and nothing feels like it's going right, that's not a time for that can become what you call toxic positivity, where it's like, hey, man, quit denying reality. Pull your head out of your bum and, like, we got to fix some stuff. We'll be okay when we fix it. We're not okay right now. Stop saying that, hey, oh, yeah, new season. We know how the playoffs work. And, like, it's one thing to tell that to a rookie. It's another to, like, go to your other team leader, Cam Hayward, the only guy on the team maybe who's older than you, and be like, hey, man, like, Cam Hayward knows what's up. He and Mike Tomlin, they're like this. They're in lockstep. Like, the conversations that have been captured, even we're getting 5 seconds of these conversations on Hard Knocks with Hayward coming off the field, talking to Mike Tomlin going into half, where Mike's like, hey, man, I need you to get your team going. I need you to go talk to this guy. Like, him and Tomlin are like this. And I think at times Tomlin and Russ have been like able to use, like Tomlin's been able to use Russ in that way. I don't know that that team isn't about to fall apart at the seams. And that's to me not like a reflection of Tomlin as a coach. I wonder, like, in the locker room, it's a part of having George Pickens in there, who's as enigmatic as anybody in the league. And it's the double-sided sword that or the double-edged knife, that's what I'm looking for, that is Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, the fall off of the Steelers, man, it's been painful to watch just because they started the season 10-3. I'm expecting these guys to go out and do big things, and they've really hit a wall. And as far as, like, this game goes, the last time these two teams met, the Ravens really dominated them, like, on the ground. Derrick Henry, he had, I think, 24 rushes, 162, averaging almost 7 yards a carry. He didn't even score that game. So I'm expecting, you know, the Ravens to go out here, try to do the same thing, especially with no Zay Flowers. Lean on that run game. This is why you guys lost last year. All season last year, you utilized the run game, and, you know, it got you to the AFC championship, and then you abandoned it. Use the run game. In the playoffs, you got to be able to run, and you got to be able to defend. And they lean on Derrick Henry, who's carried teams before by himself, and it helps when you have Lamar.
Remember, the Titans made an AFC title game.
Yeah.
With Derrick Henry. They were the one seed with Derrick Henry. Now, that was a younger Derrick Henry. But I am glad you mentioned the Zay Flowers thing, because I do think that is a huge deal. And if I have one huge reservation about Baltimore, I wouldn't say necessarily winning. Like, I think they'll figure it out, and I think the run game is the answer. But my one huge reservation about Baltimore just absolutely going gangbusters is, without Zay Flowers, how do they stretch the defense vertically? Can Rashad Bateman basically be the guy, or can they find creative ways to do it with their tight ends? And then how do you attack the middle of the field on crossers and some of these big inbreakers that have been huge for them this year? And we saw the crossers and we saw all that stuff against the Commanders when they played, and how hard that is to defend, because teams like to play a lot of man coverage and have a few extra resources floating around to try to get after Lamar or defend the run. And, like, without Zay, he's the guy that does that stuff for them. So I think that becomes really, really interesting. Bateman's got to be huge. And, like, do you want, if you're relying on Rashad Bateman to win a playoff game, I don't think that's great. So if you're Todd Monken, don't rely on Rashad Bateman. Trust that Rashad Bateman to be Rashad Bateman, but run Derrick Henry like crazy. I'd probably run Lamar a good bit. And I think you see where you go from there. All right, when we get back, we'll get into Broncos, Bills, Packers, Eagles, and then Vikings, Rams. And then we'll see if we can connect with Mike Mayock as well. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 and always live as well on the free Odyssey app. The Pick 6 at 6, where we'll pick the 6 most important players in Commanders, Bucks, outside of the quarterbacks, coming up at 6 p.m. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We were going around the NFL, but I do think we just got the magic horn going off, so I do think we're going to audible back to what our plan was at 5:30, which was to talk to Mike Mayock. Of course, Mike, former GM of the Las Vegas Raiders. He was before that the lead NFL draft analyst on NFL Network, and now he is on Westwood One as one of their lead analysts, and he'll be on the call with my guy Jason Benetti this weekend. Mike, Craig Hoffman here in D.C. Appreciate your time, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm previewing a playoff football game in Washington, D.C. I am doing quite well. We haven't had the chance to do this in a while. And one of the big keys that we've been talking about all day and really all week, Mike, is Washington's ability to stop the run and with Tampa and Bucky Irving and just how magical of a season he's had. What have you seen from what Liam Cohn has been able to design down there in Tampa and how this Bucs offense, even though everyone talks about Baker and he had an unbelievable year with 40-plus touchdown passes, really kind of starts with that run game and everything flows from there. How have you seen what they've built?
You know, it's been fun because I've spent the whole week watching tape of these two teams. And I went back to week one to watch – you know, the matchup between Washington and Tampa Bay. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, Tampa has been the worst rush team in the league the last 2 years. Then you put the tape on, and they start moving some of the Washington bodies around a little bit. And at that point, week one, their tailback was Rashad White. And Bucky Irving didn't even get a touch until somewhere around the beginning of the second quarter. He ended up with 9 touches, but was their leading ball carrier. And this is what I see with them. What I see is a couple different things. I see they're really talented up front. They've got 2 first-round picks in Tristan Wirfs and the rookie center, Graham Barton. They've got 2 second-round picks in Cody Mauch, the right guard, and Luke Getteke, the right tackle. And then they signed Ben Bredesen as a free agent this year, who's kind of a physical left guard. So when you start up front, With 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, and a 26-year-old free agent, you're in really good shape. And then you look at their tight ends, Cade Otton blocks, Payne Durham blocks, and I think the guy that's really made the difference has been Bucky Irving, because I like Rashad White, and I think he's a very good running back, and I really like his pass protection on third down. But Bucky Irving makes a big difference. He's got a different burst, a different acceleration. That big offensive line gets a push, and he makes people miss. So you don't often see a rookie come in and average 5.5 yards a carry. So I think Bucky Irving's been a big difference in this offense.
Not only does he make people miss, Mike, he makes them miss at the highest rate in the league. It's like, I think 38% of his carries, he forces at least 1 missed tackle, which is just an obscene percentage. Of course, on the Washington side of it, they'll be trying to set good edges, make sure he doesn't get out to the perimeter. And one guy that is going to be helpful in that, hopefully for Washington, is a guy that you know quite well, Cleveland Furl. What did you see in Cleveland back when you drafted him, when you guys were with the Raiders? And then what have you made of who he's become now as a player for Washington?
Yeah, I mean, I think we clearly overdrafted him. What we saw was a guy we thought could be an inside-outside player, could play defensive end, defensive tackle. He was big enough and long enough, about 6'5", 268, 270 pounds. Thought he could be a difference maker both inside on pass downs and outside on run downs. And really, I think he's a smart, tough football player. I think he can do those 2 jobs, but just not at the level of what we had hoped for. So I think what you're looking at is a solid veteran player. He's in his 6th year. You know, he played well for San Francisco last year. He's got a solid effort for Washington this year, but hasn't made a difference as a pass rusher.
I think he's been like he's part of the physicality for sure for this team. It's been interesting to watch him just be like, hey, what is he now? As opposed to obviously so many people talk about, you know, where you guys did draft him back in the day. Today we see Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu get named second team all pro. Mike, what do you see from Bobby specifically at this stage in his career? What are the things that are still all pro, some of the best in the league level? And then where do you think that if you're Liam Cohen and the Bucs offense, you're trying to, you know, exploit, you know, a weak point in this Commanders defense, whether it's somewhere around Wagner and Louvu or otherwise?
A couple things. Bobby Wagner's 34 years old, 13 years in the league. And when you put the tape on, his experience tells. He instinctively gets to the ball ahead of younger, more quick people. He's what I call a heavy player, not by his weight, but by his thud on the people he contacts with, whether it's a guard or tackle trying to get on his body, yeah, or whether he's hitting a running back. So
that.
He's a big, thick guy. Frankie Louvu flies around, and he makes a difference not only in the run game, but the pass game. He's got 14 quarterback pressures. He's got 8 sacks. I think one of the things that, Dan does so well and Washington does so well is they integrate both of those guys into their pass rush. So that front group, regardless of who's in the game at the time, whether it's Johnny Newton and Jonathan Allen or Deron Payne and or Sheldon Day, they integrate those 2 linebackers into their pass rush scheme. And I think that's critical this week. Baker Mayfield does a great job in the pocket. The more tape I watch of him, I'll tell you, the better quarterback I think he is. And I think he's got one of the best feels, natural feels, of any quarterback in the league in the pocket. He can extend the play to throw, which is what he wants to do, but in certain situations, he'll tuck it and go and get your first down or a touchdown. So I think there's a huge challenge this week, and Luvu and Wagner are going to be a big part of it, not just in the run game, but in the pass rush lane, because they're heavily integrated in the pass rush, but also covering KDOT and the running backs, because they use Bucky Irving and Rashad White. Between the two of them, those two running backs have almost 100 receptions. So their screen game, their check down game, a lot of that comes on the linebackers.
That's a great call on the pass rush stuff. Actually, Wagner and Luvu, per Next Gen Stats, the only duo in the league of off-ball linebackers to get 20-plus pressures. I know Frankie cheats a little bit because he's lining up on the edge so much, but that's great call by you on that for sure. When you flip the field and you watch what Washington is doing, we've kind of just given in to the fact that, like, so much of what they do is Jaden Daniels driven. There's good architecture around him. Obviously, Terry's fantastic. There's some other good players. But then last week in the second half, Marcus Mariota goes out and plays his tail off and leads this comeback. So when you watch that, was it Marcus doing some of the same quarterback driven stuff that Jaden has done? And this really just does require a big time performance from Jaden Daniels, or is the architecture maybe a little bit better than we've given it credit for when everyone's just like, oh, it's five doing the magic?
Well, first of all, it can be both, because five is doing the magic. But I think the architecture is really good. And we had Marcus Mariota when I was with the Raiders. And I love the match, the fit for Marcus in Washington. You really don't have to change anything. All you really have to do is highlight the quarterback run portion of the playbook for Marcus. You know, Marcus reads things out so well. And when Derek Carr went down a couple of times with us, really one time against the Chargers early in a game, Marcus came in and put 30-some points on the board against the Chargers. He was accurate. He was tough. He can beat you with his legs. He's not always a natural thrower of the ball consistently over time, but Marcus Mariota can come in and play, and he can play at a high level. And I like the architecture, as you call it, because you really don't have to change much if he's in the game. You just kind of you shift the game plan a little bit. And regarding number five, like somebody asked me the other day, you know, who would you not want to play? And right away I said, I wouldn't want to play Washington. And the reason I wouldn't want to play him is because if five stands on his head, he's going to beat you. And there are only a few guys like that in the league, and Washington has one of them. And what was cool to me was I went back, I told you, I watched the game week one, and he basically was all about his legs week one. And I'm really happy I went back and watched that game, because the progression for that kid over the season, he can still kill you with his legs. He missed a couple throws week one that he won't miss now, because he's such a natural thrower, especially on the deep ball. So he's a kid that has come an awful long way. He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league for years to come. But I would hate to be a defensive coordinator. And that's like when I watch and evaluate a college quarterback, I kind of look at it from a defensive coordinator's perspective. And I'd hate to be a defensive coordinator going up against Jaden Daniels.
Mike Mayock, analyst for Westwood One. He and Jason Benetti on the call on the radio nationally this weekend. And last question for you, Mike, is what do you do if you're Todd Bowles? The answer seems to be, as of late, blitz the high heavens. And they certainly did in week one. And then they've cranked up the blitz to 48% of pass snaps after their bye. So we know Bowles is going to blitz. But how do you do that and make it effective against a guy who is now reading the field totally different than he did in week one, does have that quick live arm, and of course can make guys miss and make those plays with his legs?
Yeah, I made a lot of notes week one about pass rush lanes for Tampa Bay. And I've watched Todd Bowles for years. I mean, he's a Temple guy and I'm a Philly guy, and I've seen him mature for the last 30 years as a player and a coach. And when in doubt, he's bringing the house. Now, what you have to do against any quarterback is talented with their legs, whether it's Lamar Jackson or Jaden Daniels, or you and I could name four or five more, None of them quite as good as those two with their legs. But I think what you try to do when you want to pressure is you want to force them in a certain direction. You know, you want to force, you want to overload it one way, and you want to force him a certain way, maybe an escape to his left. And then you got to have somebody ready. And this is what Tampa Bay didn't have week one. They rarely spied him. They spied him one time, and I think it was Tryon Shoyinka, number nine, who got credit for a two-yard sack. But they forced him out to his right. He chased him down to the sideline. But when you have a guy this talented, A, your defensive ends can't go past the quarterback to open up a lane. And B, you try to just, you know, like you try to hurt him a little bit like a Sherpa. And then you like to have an answer when he comes out the other end. The problem is trying to put a spy on that guy dictates an athlete of similar caliber. And there just aren't that many running around.
Not at all. Mike Mayock, analyst for Westwood One Sports. Again, he and Jason on the call this weekend. Mike, thanks so much for your time here on the radio. Safe travels down to Tampa and enjoy the heck out of this game. Hope it's a good one.
Yeah, and by the way, at the end of the day, you got to give Adam Peters an awful lot of credit what he did in free agency and the draft. And I think that gets overlooked sometimes. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Absolutely. I mean, hopefully he'll get all the recognition here in a couple weeks for Executive of the Year. Certainly going to be in the mix for it. Mike, appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks, man. See ya.
That's Mike Mayock with us here on The Hoffman Show. You never know who's going to show up on a football Friday. Logan Paulson, his voice is going to be in your ears coming up at 6:30. Next, though, Anthony and we, I think we got this. We got... You ready for a playoff edition of the Pick Six?
Yes, sir.
I'm ready for a playoff edition of the Pick Six. Hit the commercial break so we can do the playoff edition of the Pick Six.